Congregation, we saw last Sunday that we can expect, we can anticipate to experience persecution as we live for God in this world. That if we are committed to being faithful followers of Jesus Christ, then other people will give us a hard time. Persecution is a blessing. And since persecution doesn't really appeal to anyone, an easy reaction would be to withdraw, to cut ourselves off from the world, to avoid being in situations where other people will give us a hard time on account of our faith in Jesus. The world can't see us, they won't be able to persecute us, will they? We'll just be able to live faithfully for God, tucked away in our little communities, and all will be well. There's the problem. Part of living for God faithfully is to not live in isolation. Jesus said, I have not called you out of the world, I have called you in the world. That's what Jesus tells us this afternoon in our text. And Jesus gives us two images in this passage that we've just read to explain why it's his purpose, why it's God's plan that we not be isolated, why we not isolate ourselves. And the first of those images is the image of salty salt. You are the salt of the earth, Jesus says. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled by men. As you probably know, as you've probably heard, salt was a very valuable commodity in the ancient world. In some parts of the ancient world, salt was used as currency. Gold, silver, and salt. Salt was a valuable resource, a valuable commodity. And it's true that salt is valuable because it can enhance the flavor of the things that we eat. That was true back in the ancient world as well. But the primary purpose of salt back in the ancient world was as a substitute for throwing your meat in the freezer. Fresh meat, hot climate, equals decaying and rotten meat. But rub salt through the meat and it can be wonderfully preserved. It's the same as when sailors sailed the seven seas to discover Australia. They took salted meats with them, salted pork, salted beef. The meat would survive many months at sea, which is an improvement on eating rotten meat. Unless, of course, you like curry, in which case it doesn't really matter. But the conclusion that Jesus is drawing in this picture is that God's people in the world are agents of preservation, agents for preserving. Our presence in the world, at the very least, delays moral and spiritual decay. Leon Morris, a famous preacher of the past, explained it like this. He said, what is good in society, Jesus' followers keep wholesome. What is corrupt, they oppose. And they penetrate society for good and act as a kind of moral antiseptic. And brothers and sisters, God intends to use your presence in the world as a Christian in this way. The person who speaks up and therefore acts as a moral conscience against what is wrong. The language that you speak and don't speak. The jokes which you laugh at and the ones which very noticeably in the context of others, in the company of others, you do not laugh at. Or maybe you join a political party and work for change. Or there are causes that you pursue as an individual Christian, involving yourself in society, not separating yourself from society, not cutting yourself off at a distance so that you're isolated, but being busy and active and serving in the world and the lives of others as an advocate. And friends, God can and will use that to at least delay a slide into moral and spiritual decay, perhaps even to arrest that decay in its tracks. That can certainly be our prayer. This is a responsibility that is given to you as a Christian. It is not the responsibility of the church as the church per se. The church has its own mission. The church has its own task that Jesus has given her, to make disciples by preaching and teaching the Word of God. But this is a responsibility of disciples, of you, if you are a follower, a disciple of Jesus. And if we are to do what Jesus says here, if we are to be what we are described as being, then we must work hard to maintain our distinctive saltiness. That is to maintain a Christian world and life view, not just soak up the worldview of the society around us. We want to govern our views of everything to be governed by the Bible. Otherwise, we're just like a super sponge, a super soaker that soaks up the ideas of everyone around us. How can we preserve society? How can we be the salting influence? How can we preserve society against decay if we ourselves are decaying in exactly the same ways? No, we need to act and speak and think and do in ways that are Christian and through and through. Otherwise, we'll become this worthless salt that Jesus speaks of here, mixed with sand, mixed with other impurities, good for nothing. Do you think this will be popular? No. In fact, it will be distinctly unpopular at times because our convictions challenge the society that lives around us. And I think it's no accident that Jesus says these words immediately after encouraging us that we are blessed when we are insulted, persecuted, and slandered because of him. That's what Jesus has just said. In the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. That was the hard life of a prophet back in the Old Testament. Please don't have any romantic ideas about the life of a prophet. A prophet, to be a prophet called by God to prophesy, was to be someone who spoke hard truths into the life of the nation. Well, there were prophets who had an easy life. There were prophets who did quite well out of the deal. They were the ones who went around preaching peace, peace, and all will be well, and God is pleased with you. They prophesied, let the good times roll, and everyone loved them. No one had an objection to their message, just like our society doesn't object to the message, if they were interested, the message of a Joel Osteen with positive messages about God wanting to bless everyone and making our lives rich and prosperous. No one cares about that sort of a message. But salt that is distinctively salty, that's quite another story. It's not popular to remind people that the folk on Nauru and Manus Island are made in the image of God, that they have inherent dignity and ought to be treated with respect on account of the one who made them. But if God's people keep quiet, who will speak up for the oppressed? Who will speak up for the downtrodden? Let me tell you, in the context of election, it won't be big business and neither will it be the unions. It won't be the politicians who spin in their respective orbits. Where's your soul? How does your Christianity emerge when you are outside of the walls of this church building? Is it safely stored in the salt shaker where there's no risk of it being corrupted? Didn't have a glass one. A salt shaker. Nice and safe. Nothing's going to corrupt this. This isn't going to lose its saltiness. But neither is it going to be good for anything either. Where's your salt? Is it safely stored in the salt shaker where there's no risk of corruption? But you can't make meat salty by keeping it in the salt shaker either, can you? It'd be good for nothing. The only way to have salt that's useful is for salt to actually get used. Salty salt. But then Jesus gives us a second image. He gives us the image, a second image, to dissuade us from a life lived in isolation from the world. That's the image of shining light. Jesus says to his disciples, and therefore also to us, you are the light of the world. Jesus doesn't say you should be. He doesn't say you will be. He says you are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand and it gives light to everyone in the house. Light, as we've been picking up in many of the songs that we've been singing this evening, time and time again through the Old Testament, God describes his people using that image of light. God's people are a light to the world, a light to the nations. God using his people as an evangelistic tool to show that he is the true and living God. I will also make you a light to the Gentiles, that you may bring my salvation to the ends of the earth, a light for the world as a whole, that the nations may be saved. Perhaps the particular city on a hill that Jesus has in mind is Jerusalem itself, visible from miles around. A lighthouse to the world, that's how God intended it to be. And now Jesus says, this lighthouse to the world is no longer a city or even one nation. It's us. It's God's people. It's the church. We are the light of the world. We are, Jesus, lighthouses on the hill, shining, radiating, beacons of light and hope and salvation. Our light gives hope and light to everyone. And of course, we are especially to be a lighthouse in Glendale, here in Toowoomba. And what is our light? What is our light? Well, Jesus continues in verse 16. He says, in the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. What is our light? Our good deeds are the light that is to shine before the world. And this is what's staggering. Jesus says our good deeds are evangelistic. Our good deeds will lead people to know God and to worship him. They will glorify him. That's the word Jesus uses here. Not just thanks God for these nice people called Christians, but Father in heaven, I too worship you. I call upon your name. A shining light that draws people to Jesus, just like moths are attracted to the flame. Let's talk for a few moments about words. Words play a necessary role in the salvation of the world. We're talking about light, but words are important. Words play a necessary role in the salvation of the world. No matter how nice you are to people, unless they hear words about who God is and why Jesus came, then they won't know who to believe in. How can they call on the one of whom they have not heard? Words are crucial. We are not fulfilling our mission in the world if we do not use words. Without words, people may very well think that Christianity is just being nice to other people. And yet, Jesus tells us that our good deeds will, humanly speaking, be a way that God brings people to worship him for the first time. What are the good deeds that Jesus speaks of here that will bring people to worship? We don't need to go outside this passage, do we? We don't need to go outside the Sermon on the Mount. We don't need to invent examples like helping old ladies across the road. I've never seen anyone do that. Have you seen anyone help an old lady across the road? We understand what's going on here. But we don't need to make up examples because Jesus gives us plenty of examples. Just cast your mind back over the Beatitudes that we've been looking at over the last few weeks. Our humility and showing mercy to others and being a peacemaker. These are good deeds that let our light shine before men. Or as we head forwards in the Sermon on the Mount, it would include valuing marriage, telling the truth, turning the other cheek, loving our enemies, giving to the needy. Or we could think more broadly in the context of the New Testament, perhaps. Think of the fruit of the Spirit, love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and faithfulness and gentleness and self-control. Jesus is teaching us this evening that shining light, good deeds, can powerfully affect an unbelieving world. They are a crucial aspect of our being a mission church. As we live as Jesus' people to bring light to a dark world. So I want to ask you this evening, what's up with your light? What's your light doing? You may remember or you may recall during times of warfare, during the Second World War, for example, people put up blackout curtains at night. They put up curtains, the thick, dark, black curtains in their houses to prevent any light from escaping. You see, light from a city, light from a town, light on the top of a hill would provide a landmark, a target for enemy night bombers, or would at least be a navigation aid towards that. So it was very important, it was crucially important not to let any light escape from your house. But we could ask, have you put up blackout curtains on your life? The good that you do radiating no further than the confines, than the walls, than the curtains of your own family or your church family? Or are you seeking to burn brightly, shining radiantly as the light of the world? The war is over, you see. Open the curtains. Let the light shine. But you might say, how do I know that my good deeds will result in worship to God? I mean, I might do good, but what am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to, I don't know, get a big badge or a lanyard around my neck and I am a Christian, put a bumper sticker on my car so that when somebody sees me doing a good thing for somebody else, they'll think, oh, that's, wow, I really should find out about this Christianity thing. Now, we don't do that, do we? Of course not. I think that's the wrong question. The better question, I think, is this. What will happen when those to whom you show kindness and good deeds discover that you're a Christian? You see, the goal is not that we as Christians just be involved in random acts of kindness, but that we are people who are committed to the lives of other people. People you rub shoulders with regularly, not just hit and runs, but relationships for the long term. That's part of our strategy as a church with our Kids Hope ministry, mentoring at Glenvale State School. It's not a preach the gospel ministry, it's a relationship ministry. It's showing love to needy children. It's sowing relational seeds that God may harvest later in life. Long-term relationships, long-term light. And if you're showing kindness to the people who are in your life, then they will inevitably discover that you are a Christian. Most likely, of course, they will discover you're a Christian anyway, won't they? They will discover you're a Christian eventually, regardless of your good deeds. And so the question really is, what will happen when they discover for the very first time that you are a Christian? Will that come as a shock to them? Oh, that can't be... You must be thinking of someone else. That can't possibly be true. I'm sure I heard you say or do or act in a certain way, followed by something that you wish you hadn't been doing or saying or acting. Or instead would they say, of course, I should have guessed. It all makes sense now. Let your light shine before men. And so our good deeds are important. They are important in and of themselves, as acts of obedience towards God, love your neighbor as yourself, but they are also vitally important in the mission of the church. They display the very character of the God who came to this world to send forth his light in the person of Jesus. They display the God of all mercy and compassion and love, who gave us his son Jesus, who gave him over to death that in Jesus he might show love and mercy and compassion to us. And so, friends, we must not simply do good as if doing good, our being nice, will magically convert people to Christ. Christians are not people who do nice things, although I hope you do. But Christians are not people who do nice things. That's not the definition of a Christian. We are people to whom God has revealed the depth of his mercy and love. And out of that love, we show love to others. We let our light shine and our good deeds demonstrate that our message is genuine, that our message is sincere. Jesus says to us, you are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. Let your light shine before men that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. Amen. Let's pray.